Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome, everybody. It is Sunday. That means it's the main course. I'm your host, Patrick Martins. We are broadcasting live out of Roberta's Restaurant, 261 Moore Street. And we are engineered, if he's still awake, by Joe Galarraga. Joe, are you still there?
I'm here.
And you have your trusty Sunday intern with you, huh?
Yeah, Latima's here. We're hanging out.
Latima, you're like, this is how you be an intern. This Con Ed bill is overdue. I want you to go down to the Con Ed office and talk them out of it. And then that's politics. You're going to learn about politics today. So, it's a very interesting show. We have Greg Blase in studio, so we're very excited to talk about cheesemongering. And also, he is the head salumi buyer for Italy and soon to be Italy Chicago. So it's going to be a good conversation. We had an interesting week. I mean, a lot of stuff happened, Joe. One is the Museum of Food and Drink, of which I am fortunate to be on the board of, just accomplished their Kickstarter goal and raised, I think they even went over it, and raised $100,000 for their first touring exhibition, right?
Yeah, that is so awesome. I'm really, really happy for that because all those people involved are wonderful. Dave Arnold and Peter Kim and... I'm just so excited for them.
Nastasia
Lopez.
He's brought together a real fascinating crowd. I mean, that video, the Kickstarter video, I mean, Wiley Dufresne was in it. Mario Batali was in it. Our own Jessica Harris was in it. I love listening to her show. Who else? I mean, Anita Lowe. They just had on and on and on. Cesare Caselle. I mean, this is really about to take off. And the cereal puffer for which they raise this money actually sits in our office, Joe, doesn't it? Are you ever tempted to make cereal, like a bowl of cereal?
No. After I saw Peter try to use it and it exploded everywhere, I think I'm going to keep that one for the professionals.
Yeah, it could have really decapitated somebody.
Yeah, that was definitely... Everyone should check out that video. It's pretty awesome.
And Joe, would you say it's safe to say that anyone is a complete loser if they don't come to our Hawaiian barbecue on August 11th, 2013?
Definitely. I mean, there's going to be so much awesome stuff. The Laney barbecue and the whole pig. And
Heritage Foods USA, Untitled, Maysville, Court Street Grocers, Roberta's, Brooklyn Grange, La New Yorkina. And drinks will be Empire Brewing Company, Anfora, Sombra Mezcal, and Astral Tequila Blanco, with music by DJ, I think he's a Republican, this guy, but DJ Reaganomics. So,
I guess so.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron is trying to cut across political boundaries. I mean, food transcends politics, right? So it is very interesting. There was an article today, Joe, I'm sure you read it, about the farm bill and how ironic it is that these House Republicans have cut out the food stamp program because, you know, you got to be careful where you put your money. And yet they have supported what do they do when they... Help subsidize these very, very, very wealthy farmers. I mean, so they support that. Come on, those guys, they've made it, they've worked hard, they deserve to get even richer than they already are,
which they are.
But because there's some corruption within the food stamp system, that you got to cut out completely. Well, I mean, it's really, really, these House Republicans, and I'm sure the government has always had a bunch of ignorant people.
Of course it has.
They come from Missouri and Arkansas in 1820.
They come from all 50 states.
Yeah, but I mean, in 1820, I imagine the crop wasn't that much better, but this particularly is it's a sad group of people. I mean, these are politicians are people that you should want to have a dinner with and learn about.
A lot of these guys are just holding on, man. They're just holding on, you know what I mean?
And they got voted in by very small groups of people.
Because those are the only people that can vote. Those are the people that do vote.
Even Rangel, I like him. But, I mean, that guy, I mean, he just goes to a few bodegas in the Harlem, and now all of a sudden he's voting on wars and stuff.
Hey, you know, that's America, man, you know? Anybody can do any job anytime.
I just think they should make the Clintons. They should just say, Clintons, we're making you guys king and queen for 10 years. Just pull our shit together.
You like it? You like it?
I mean, yeah, I think they'll do pretty good. But anyway.
I do know that Bill Clinton likes black raspberry ice cream. That much I do know.
Well, they say he was our first black president.
Well, you know.
That has been said about him in the New York Times and stuff because, you know, he likes barbecue. And
he's the man.
I liked him. I think
he looks better now than he did when he was in office. Like now he's like got this whole silver fox thing going on.
He became a vegan, you know. Did you know that?
Why would he do something like that? I thought he liked ribs eating, like, and chicken dum-dum. And everything.
Yeah, that's how he became president. But then I think he got to 65 and they were like,
your heart's going to go, Will.
Your gut's a shit show, buddy.
I want to go out guns a-blazing, man. I don't care. They can't take away my proteins and my fats. I can't live without those things.
It's funny. Now I have a kid, so I have started to ask myself the question. But I still am like, I'm going to go as far as I can. I mean, I'm going to literally go until my body is like, absolutely not. When it says no, right. It still means yes.
Right, of course.
But absolutely not. Oh, then I'll stop.
There has to be some pretty serious warning signs like, I can't feel my body below the waist ever. You know?
I cannot see below my waist. But I do think that, you know, I am the kind of guy who would rather go all out until the very end and then stop. And then go and only eat tabbouleh for the rest of my life rather than be like, no, I'm on the long road and I'll just eat once a week. And no,
several hospitals in the tri-state area and around America can attest to my, you know, adherence to your policy.
You got to go all out. You got to feast, you know, and it's funny coupled with this eat local and there's also a nouvelle cuisine. I don't know, this kind of satisfaction out of like a nickel sized veal medallion with a wisp of vegetables next to it. I want all out. I want like in Italy, 15 courses.
Sure.
But every now and then.
15 courses of those nickel sized medallions of veal I can take. I don't have a problem with the small portions. I love the small portions.
You mean like a mousse bouche, so you're not eating like a 32-ounce flank
but steak? But, you go to, what is it, a Bully or the Spanish restaurant. I mean, they serve you like 64 of those, right? I mean,
Blanca, too, right here next door.
And I love that. I mean, I'll sit there for 10 hours and have you keep replacing plates and, you know, changing my diaper, and I'm in there, man. I got no problems with that.
Well, I do think that cheese, the biggest thing that keeps cheese, and, you know, my wife's business is cheese, so I'm always trying to think about ways for that movement to grow. Cheese has to be served as an appetizer in addition to everyone's appetizer. So everyone orders their appetizer, everyone orders their main course, and then the waiter's supposed to say, with your appetizers, do you want a communal table cheese plate? 80% of the people would say yes to that. But if offered in juxtaposition and in competition with dessert and chocolate, plus it tacks on another hour to the meal.
Restaurant operations problem more than anything else, I think, in this country. But you know.
But I just think Anne would go through, if cheese was an appetizer all of a sudden.
Her business would be better, huh?
Well, no, I just think cheese consumption at, I think 80% of diners would be like, sure. Sure. The cheese plate for $12 right in the middle of the plate, and
stick
I get
it in there.
Because, you know, one appetizer and a main course is often not enough. And people don't want to break that rule of being like, and bring a couple of extra of the torta, you know, of the plain, and just put them in the middle because I'm going to want a spoonful.
Sure.
But that's the way people are supposed to eat. In like, that's the way they do it in Italy. And they go all out.
I agree with that. I mean, when I was eating sushi on Friday, and I always like to have oshinko. I love to have the pickles.
What is that?
They're like the pickles, you know, like there's a lot of like daikon and like pickled calabash and like all this crazy weird shit, you know. Mm-hmm. But you leave it, you know, like when you eat in a sushi restaurant or generally, you know, they give you plates, they clear plates. They give you plates, they clear plates. But they leave the pickles, you know, because they're good. They cleanse your palate, you know, throughout the meal. And I could see, I would eat cheese like that. But I also love it at the end of the meal because it's this thing where, like, I have stuffed myself to the fucking point where, like, I might die. But then they bring me out, like, five great cheeses and there's more booze that comes with that course, man. You know,
when your wife's in the cheese business, remember though, it's quantity, not quality.
Right, right. I'll do both. I'll take quality. I'll take the quantity. Yeah, right. Yeah, I get it though. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you of course have spent a lot of time with cheese. In fact, you call yourself a cheesemonger. What does that mean? I think I know what it means.
I don't know anymore. I used to know. I used to know when there were fewer. But now I don't know. I don't know anymore. I mean, I'm a man who buys and sells cheese. So in the most basic terms, you know, I'm definitely a cheesemonger.
Now, you not only buy cheese, but you buy cheese for Italy, which is a very cheese-centric or, you know, cheese-concentrated store.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Cheese is part of everything that we do in that place.
And it has a direct, literally, financial and cultural and historical pipeline into Piemonte.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the main investor is from. So tell us about the cheese program there, so our listeners know who we're talking to.
I mean, you know, I've been, you know, like Pat said, I've been a cheesemonger for a lot of years. But I took the job at Eataly because I was interested in knowing more about, you know, the epistemological effects of, you know, cheese on Italy and, you know, its value as currency. You know, back in the days when the Cistercian monks in Chiaravalle were, like, using grana padano as currency and shit like that. Like, that's amazing to me.
I have 2 pounds of gorgonzola that says you're going to help me repair my barn.
Can I get a half a lamb for that? You know, can I get some salt for that? I took that job and I've been working with, you know, conjunction with Slow Foods and with B&B Hospitality Group.
Which is Batali and Bastianich.
Yeah. And for Italy, in Italy. And, you know, they're super good to me, man. I just, you know, I get to buy tons of amazing Italian cheese.
Now, how they have, where do they have stores? They have one store in Turin,
Italy?
Right?
Yeah, they have a Torino store, they have a Genoa store, a Bari now. They opened up this massive...
Wow, Bari, so southern Italy.
Yeah, right? I think they have, you know, they're out scouting all kinds of crazy locations. So there's still about 4 stores or more in Tokyo.
Oh, wow. Tokyo, right, they have 4 stores.
I believe so, yeah.
And now only one in America, right? But soon to be 2.
Yeah, we're going to Chicago. You know, I'm going to... pack up my bags for temporarily at least and go and help them out to set up the cheese counter in the Windy City. Absolutely.
Well, that's very interesting. We're going to talk about
the apple.
So now tell us, this cheese program, are 100% of your cheeses Italian?
No, a goodly portion of them are, but what's great about Italy is that they, you know, they really allow me to support U.S. artisans. So I have a huge, you know, I've got a lot of types of American cheese as well.
Do they have to be Italian style?
No, actually, or maybe they will after this broadcast. But you know, I usually use that.
Don't worry, no one's listening.
Yeah, right. Okay, I use that caveat as a way to get in like Alpine style cheeses. You know, I get great cheeses from like northern Vermont and things that are made using Alpine recipes. Cheeses from all over America. You know, that's how I get Loire River Valley style goat cheeses in there.
Now, can you generalize at all North, Central?
I always generalize.
Good, good, good. So could you stereotype Italy into 3 categories? No. Well, the South, Central, and North.
Uh-huh.
Can you basically say things about those 3 regions of cheese, or do you really have
about
to go?
About the cheese? Absolutely.
Or do you have to say Liguria, Piemonte, Toscana, you know, well, Sardinia? Like, can you just say basically southern cheeses are harder, northern cheeses are...
There's some, like, you know, there's definitely some basic recipes or cheese-making style that goes in, you know, with, like, you in the north, you have this amazing mix of cultures. There's, you know, Piemonte borders several countries.
Germany, France.
Switzerland, you know, so you have this, you have very French cheeses. You have, you know, these soft ripened, bloomy rind cheeses. You have very delicate and precious style of cheese making up there. But you also still have like this, like rock solid, you know, mountain tomas that are very Italian. In the center of the country, you know, you've got a lot of sheep. You know what I mean? So you have like these firm sheep cheeses that you can sort of, you know, this sort of style of, like, you know, semi-firm to firm pressed cheeses that are always going to be available, you know, in Tuscany and Umbria, you know, like these, like, sort of ruddy textured landscapes, you know. And then in the south, as it evens out, you get a lot of pasta filata cheeses, you know, pulled and cut curd cheeses, Caciocavallo, mozzarella di bufala, you know, burrata, things like that, you know, pulled curd cheeses. But then when you go to, like, the islands, which are in the south, you get a different thing altogether, you know?
I love it. Italy was the horror of Europe. I mean, everyone got everybody passed in there, through man. There. Yeah.
You know?
Like a Paris Hilton, right, of Europe. Anyway, now how do you get all this stuff? I mean, do you have one distributor and you're like, I got a pallet in Geneva this week. I got a pallet in Rouge, France, you know, Rougies.
We don't usually go through Rongie. My French is as bad as my Italian. We consolidate pallets. You know, I bring in stuff from the producers and
direct. Right, you try to mainly work direct.
Well, I do that, but I mean, I also support local distributors. You know, I mean, I'll deal with American Farms here, cheesemakers here, local distributors here, sub-distributors here sometimes. But to get most of my cheese from Italy, you know, it's we buy a lot of that, or we work directly with the producers as much as I can, you know. So our stuff's consolidated and sent over to me on boats. I got fucking boats, planes, trains, automobiles. All this cheese is constantly moving towards me, you know what I mean?
So when it arrives, who's it being brought by? Like a port delivery service?
Yeah, we have a company we do a lot of business with Atalanta, and our stuff comes
with customs and stuff.
Well, you know, I mean, I can only speak to what I do. I don't personally have to deal with any of that.
Okay.
I'm just, you know, I make my wish list. You know,
has there ever been a cheese that you could not get that you were expecting because of some customs issue that someone else had to deal with?
I don't know. I mean, doesn't everybody go through that for everything?
Yeah, for everything.
You know.
But, I mean, are there certain cheeses that you cannot get because of how they're produced?
Well, of course. I mean,
raw milk.
Yeah. You know, we have to adhere to the laws of the land. You know, the FDA, you know, our almighty overlords in everything that we do food-related.
FDA. Steve Jenkins rails against them. What do you have to say about him?
About Steve or the FDA?
FDA. I want politics here. We're looking for stories.
I mean, I'm a believer that, you know, governance over foodstuffs is necessary.
God, you guys are all so good.
But
you're
so
friendly.
But it's like, I often question the meaning, or I question the motives of everything. That's why I'm a cheesemonger, you know?
Cheesemongers are nice. My friend always told me purveyors are nice based off how fast their food spoils.
Hell yeah.
So fish guys, total dicks. Meat guys in between. Cheese people, they improve with age. It's unbelievable.
The more ancient milk, glass of milk. If I can sell you a 6-year-old glass of milk, man, I'm doing pretty well in this world.
Hey, listen,
you know?
Parmalat. I have some 6-year-old Parmalat sitting
those
around.
Those Tetra Paks, yeah. They save up everything, man.
I'm like, milk in the cupboard?
Something odd about that.
Yeah.
But yet, you know, like I'm an American. I like everything cold. I love ice in my drinks.
Even their ice isn't cold. You get one little sweaty ice cube.
And you look at it and it's gone in a second. It's like, can I get a Coke? And they're like, absolutely. It's piping hot. It's got a fucking lemon in it, which makes it worse.
I'm like, you've only given my Coca-Cola 2 degrees here. Exactly. I need at least 30.
Exactly.
Well, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and talk prosciutto, bacon, cheese, and the city of Chicago with an Italian supermarket opening there. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to Who Buggin' by Obesity on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from the main course.
Wow.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surifarms.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Donate.
It's for a good cause, man. Heritage Radio, super awesome, dudes. Snacky Tunes, and that other show where dudes get drunk. I love Nicole Taylor, Hot Grease, Dave Arnold, Cooking Issues, Farm Report,
Patrick Martins.
Listen to the radio, because it's better than the TV, because it doesn't have pictures to distract you. Learn about food. Donate at HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Joe, you're promoted. After that, I am impressed. Sweet. That was pretty sweet.
Thank you.
Can you just play that over and over on repeat throughout my show from 12 to 12:45 every Sunday?
Next week, yeah.
So we're back. I'm Patrick Martins. You're listening to The Main Course. We're sponsored by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Do you sell?
I don't believe we do.
Well, you have La Quercia, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We are engineered by Joe Galarraga. And so we're going to play the Rorschach drawing test for radio, which means I'm going to say a word, and then you'll just wax poetic.
This is censored, right?
Yes, it is.
Oh, thank God.
A pursuit.
Why are you pronouncing it like that?
That's how somehow American Italians have taken all the vowels away.
It hurts me. I mean, but I'm...
Prosciutto, ma parla italiano anch'io, allora posso dire...
I get people who ask me come up and say, can I get some prosciutto?
Prosciutto. I still don't know how to spell prosciutto. I swear to God.
But you know how to say it, though.
I know how to say it. So, prosciutto, tell us, what are the great prosciuttos of the world?
The prosciutto San Daniele is my favorite, and I like them because they're very sweet, and... the air up there in the mountains by the Alps is so good. They're mellow and buttery, But I recently we got some prosciutto toscano, which is herbaceous. They cure it in the herbs of the region of Tuscany. So you get this nice juniper berry.
If it's like their bread, I don't like it already.
Well, I like it. The Tuscan hams are I like because they're a lot like the Spanish hams, where the fat, that big flap of fat that they smear on and that's around there, it tastes like herbs and shit, which I really like.
If the San Daniele is Italy's best, would it beat Spain's best?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I love Pata Negra and Iberico Bayota those are just incredible hams. It's got dark meat. They're
But there, is it a smaller production, these Bayota ones, and San Daniele is a much bigger company?
No, well, San Daniele is smaller production than Parma. But Parma, I think, gets, there's so much out there. There's amazing prosciutto di Parma, obviously. Mm-hmm. Being classic doesn't mean that you're a passé. Mm-hmm. That's classic shit. You should eat it all the time.
Do any of those guys care about the breed?
You got a lot of Duroc pigs out there, and, in the north, you get the Durocs and Duroc and white. Large white pigs.
But it doesn't matter to make Parma. They don't dictate.
They use multiple breeds, definitely. Mm-hmm. know what I mean? I think that's a part of, that's what separates that Iberico mm-hmm. stuff from the Parma hams, And I think that the curing process, I think that the Parma process, and this is just purely me speculating and just from the hams I have handled, the process is friendly to other breeds, mm-hmm. what I mean? Because the salt curing process and the drying and the smearing and everything that goes into making that is a more accepting. Whereas I think that, I don't know this, but I feel it, that I feel like that, Iberico hams, the curing process is very, friendly to that breed, mm-hmm. to the Iberico pigs or those white foot pigs or,
Is there growing practice requirements?
Italy?
Most people do it well because I've seen those farms are nice, but yeah. Do they state and dictate they must have access to pasture. The sows cannot be crated. I mean,
are you talking about Prosciutto di Parma or
and San Daniele and all that?
I feel like they are. You know, I have less experience going to those to the production areas as mm-hmm. I do. You know, I'm the end user. You know, I'm the little dude at the end of the funnel. You know what I mean? So I'm slicing and dicing that stuff. And I feel like they must.
Well, you're driving the whole thing from up there.
You know, but I feel like I've been slicing the same ham for fucking 20 years. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be a good thing, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, as I grew in my trade and as I've done more work, you know, I've gotten hams that are older. And I realized for me, my favorite is like the old, you know, I like hams that are aged like 2 years minimum, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's why I go to the Iberica because the Parma hams age out, you know, and they're super buttery still at 2 years. And there's all that salinity is fucking gone, you mm-hmm. know, and you're just tasting sweet pork, you know, mm-hmm. and fat. And these are things I like, you know? you know? And I feel like, you know, the older hams I get, like the ones that I've been able to eat, you know, from Spain are like that, and the muscles are all broken down like that, so it's buttery. Mm-hmm. But it also tastes gamey and like slightly pornographic and bad. You know, like it tastes
naughty.
Like, yeah, you know, and I like that. You know,
that's good. Yeah. Well, let's look domestically for a while. I mean, what is the prosciutto?
Prosciutto.
Cos'è la situazione prosciutto qui in America?
The best prosciutto and the prosciutto...
Or not the best, but I mean, is the culture here growing?
Absolutely.
I mean, I know there's Cesare Casella does his stuff.
And that's, you know, that
you guys.
Salumi crudo, I think, in America is absolutely growing. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we support... I mean, we purchase salumi from Sala Maria Rossi, from Cremonelli, from Molinari, from Charlito Scocina, from Larchmont, from... whoever I've, you know, from Sala Maria Bialesi, you know, like we've tasted, you know, and I'm even, you know, sort of going to bring in a little bit of stuff from Fabrique Delice, like a little French company, but I'm going to rename the salumi something on the shelf. You know what I mean? Like, and it, when I started to do this work and sell this shit, man, you know, there was like, there was very little stuff you could get your hands on, you know, and so I feel like in the last like 15 years that I've done this, man, absolutely. It's tripled, quadrupled. People, you know, the culture of, like we do everything, you know, we Americanize. We, you know, we make things American. But, you know, our job is to do that. It's to take the old traditions and make them our mm-hmm. own. So yeah. I feel like things, you know, that are being made, like salumi crudo, prosciutto crudo, that are being made in the United States are very American in their nature. Mm-hmm. But, you know, comparable on a, just on a quality taste, you know, depth level. As anything I've ever eaten.
Especially if you use the good breeds and stuff, you're already 50% or 30% of the way there.
We have some good animals in this country, man.
Speaking of the country, you were about to pack your bag at the end of the stick, board a train, and go to Chicago.
I believe I am. I believe I am.
To the hog butcher of the world.
Right.
And the real nexus, the entire middle of where everything happened, Chicago and Kansas City. It's also like the queen city of the Midwest, right? It's beautiful, striking, and there you are taking an Italian concept that exists in Tokyo and around Italy and New York, and you're going right to the heart of America to open a huge Italy. I mean, it's a very interesting entrepreneurial moment.
I think it's going to be a big challenge and a big success as a result of that. I know mm-hmm. for myself, you know, I've worked on both coasts and I've worked outside of the country. And I'm such a moron. I've never been to Chicago. I'm a virgin to all things Chicago. So for me, I'm really excited on so many levels. I get to meet a whole bunch of new people, you know, a whole bunch of new producers. Yeah. And, you know, I know how New Yorkers eat. You know what I mean? I know how we, like, I know how we satisfy ourselves mm-hmm. here. And when I moved in to live in California, I learned that same thing, you know. I have no idea, you know. I have no idea what I'm walking into.
Well, they're a big steak town,
that's
right?
That's what I hear. That's what you and I were talking about when we had talked before.
Yeah, I mean, when Chicago people are like, you know, it's Wednesday. Where are we going to go out Friday night? But a lot of people in that town are like steakhouse.
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I love a good steakhouse. Like, I still go to, like... Peter Luger's with no reservation. Like, you know,
yeah,
they pretend they're going to seat me in an hour and I get in there in like 15 minutes.
Exactly.
You know? I've eaten by myself in that restaurant with like a New York Post and a pair of flip flops. People are like, look at me, what the fuck is this guy doing? You know, like I want that. You know, I'm looking forward to that.
So now you're going to have your own salumi program. You make your sausages, I'm sure. So now is that going to, is the Chicago ethnicities, you know, that live there, Polish, Slovenian, they're all these kind of like,
I mean,
Russian.
My instincts would say that absolutely, that, you know what I mean? I don't, they just ask me for prosciutto and cheese to make their, to make the food, you know, and I give it to them. So I'm not really abreast of exactly what they're going to do as far as like their fresh meat program, but I'm sure that they're going to adapt, you know. And
the kielbasa,
yeah,
you know.
And I love that stuff. I mean, I love that. I lived in a, you know, in Greenpoint for several, for a long time when I was a kid, when I first moved here, like, and I want that. Like, I want, you know, I want to eat, you know, massive amount of pierogies and like, you know, have like white pork sausages, like the one I cooked last night that I kept thinking was going to run out of fat, you know, when I grilled it.
Didn't.
And it just didn't, you know?
So now tell me, are you going, what's the Chicago store going to look like? I mean, what do you know of
it? Well, from what I understand, you know, there, my, the area I'll be running looks similar to the area that was in Torino, but I don't really know, you know what I mean? I'm, you know, They don't want to distract me. I'm like too much of an infantile person. You know, they're just like, Greg, here's a cheese department. Can you?
So now, how do you run it? Give us a 2-minute lens into your week. I mean, are you mainly counting and keeping inventory? Are you being on the phone with people to order stuff?
I work from top to bottom. I do all that.
How many people work under you?
Oh, I mean, I've got 15, 16 people that work under me or with me, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I try to. You know, and it's funny, you know, the guys and gals that work with me, you know, I don't make a lot of lists. I don't do a lot of spreadsheets and checklists and things like that. I'm not smart enough for that kind of work. I tend to try to deconstruct and get everybody trained up so that they can work all of the jobs, you know. And then that way, you know, when you work in retail and you work in retail perishables, food, you know, high volume, you got to really be able to roll with the punches, I think, on a day-to-day basis.
And that's really nice that you don't have one person just do one small segment of the entire thing and get bored over time.
You give people ownership over certain areas because I think that when you do that, you make them better employees. So other employees get brought into their world. You know, so nobody's, you know, everybody's sort of telling each other what to do.
Exactly.
You know?
Well, I'm a big fan of Poilin and in France, that baker, he, you know, rather than have a top-down system of 400 employees, he has one central oven and like 16 independent baking teams from that one central pile. It's very smart. And now your way to make everyone be able to do everything. It makes perfect sense.
You know, I mean, and like that's the thing. You know,
they leave there better.
I hope so. I hope so,
as opposed to they didn't just put the labels on the cheeses.
Like, what did you do? You know, I rang the cash register.
Yeah.
Fuck that. You know, like, you got to.
It's got to be more.
And then I have people that have worked for me that start out ringing the cash register, and they work with me, and then they're great. They're some of the best counter people I've ever had.
Can you explain to me why the cheese counters in Italy or the cheese, you know, windows of little Enogastronomia always look so lovely, the way they place the cheeses? And here in most places, it's like, people just
don't know how to put
cheeses on top of
like,
each other.
Like, one of the things, like, what I'll always do is to keep my hands in the cheeses, I'll always want to build the displays, you know? That's the best. That's the sweetest plum. You know what I mean? I can tell people to fuck off, you know, because at the end, you get that window, and, you know, it's gorgeous, you know, like, and I think that that's why they tolerate me there. You know, I'm not Italian. I'm kind of a douche. You know, like, I do all kinds of stupid shit. But, like, at the end, when they're looking, they're like, ah, oh, bravo, Greg. Oh,
it's a bellissimo.
Exactly.
That's how that whole country runs. They're like, the government stole all the money. Oh, but they look great on the television.
My God, that man's suit was impeccable. Yeah,
so, did you see how small his cell phone was?
Exactly.
Yeah. So now you answer to two cultures, the Italians and the Americans.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's an interesting, do they demand different things? I mean, are we indeed right and the Italians are looking for more how the counter is and the Americans are looking at the finances? Or
I mean, you know, it's interesting. I think that the Italians, and I work for great people, you know, like, but they're looking for whatever they're looking for at that exact moment in time down to the second. You know what I mean? And that's it, you know, like, but the aesthetics, you know, it's funny because they allow me, the aesthetics of me personally You know, I certainly am not a well-groomed, you know, lithe Italian man. You know, like, I'm a pudgy, like, Swedish-French-Canadian dude that, like, plods around their store, you know?
But like, they, beaver skins but the, hanging
the,
off
here. Yeah, you know, but the cheese department looks great. So, yeah. You know, absolutely. But the Americans are you know, when I've worked with the people from Vitaly Bastianich, you know, they're not pragmatic in a bad way, you know, but they're Americans. Like, they come from a business that obviously works and expands, you know. And Italy also is that same thing, but it's different. You know, the Italians and Americans are very different. I enjoy being the buffer, not a buffer, but I like to be in between that, because I'm just the dude who sells cheese. You know,
you're
what I
mean? Like their beach ball.
Yeah,
at the exactly. concert, you know,
the just weevil that wobbles that does not fall down.
Exactly, you're always afloat. You're always above them. Yeah, man, weaving, jiving. No, that's awesome. And, well, I mean, we could have – there was so much I wanted to kind of cover. Well, one of the things, I mean, you're going to be moving to Chicago.
Well, I'm going to be living there for a little bit.
Yeah, for a little bit. Wisconsin yeah. is one of the biggest cheese states Absolutely. In America. And somehow I think in an amazing way, on a national level we know that, but on like the most local level, like sometimes we forget that Wisconsin – even, I don't know, more than Vermont is a very
100%.
Fascinating cheese state. Can you talk to, you know, cheeses you know from there and how you're going to use them at Chicago?
I mean, I buy from one of my favorite producers in the world is the Uplands Dairy. You know,
I don't know them.
They make the Pleasant Ridge Reserve. It's a great American cheese that I met the owner, the founder, Mike Gingrich, a number of years ago, and they make this Alpine-style cheese. And I think that was one of the first really sort of straight, hardcore European recipes that I had tried in America, you know. And it was a fantastic cheese then. It's a fantastic cheese now. The cheesemaker is this guy, Andy Hatch, that I work with. And I'm supposed to go to the ACS at the end of the month, not to go to the, you know, conference, because I'm not a member, but I'm supposed to head out there and meet with him and meet a bunch of producers from the area. And as much as you know, I think that Wisconsin is like it's the same thing as I was saying before to you. Like, they're very classic. They're classic producers of dairy. You know, so in our localized everything by the minute, how cool are we that we know where all our food came from, and we examined the shit that came out of all of our animals this morning, or we know what they ate and crapped out. You're like, those guys have always just been, you know, putting out great dairy products, you know? So maybe, like, you know, there's a part of our culture and cheese mongering making that says, yeah, whatever, you know? But, I mean, that's an important place, obviously, you know? It's like the cradle of the dairy industry and United States, if I'm not wrong. You know,
I mean, more cheese probably comes out of that state in terms of, I'm sure, you know, cheeses that would not be considered, you know, the best. But
you gotta use the dairy, man. I mean, you know,
dairy's healthy. I mean, thank God people have their craft singles in a way, you know? I mean, if that's the cheese that's...
I've eaten more of those than I care to admit.
Are they healthy?
I don't know, but they've saved me from many hungover nights. I actually,
Ann forgot to bring cheese, so I was like, oh, of course, all indignant. I was like, what? So she was forced to get me cheese craft singles. And I have to say, the cheeseburger, I had that and I was very happy.
Of course you were.
I was just like, thank God, I put two layers.
You know, like, that food transports you. Like, eating craft singles, definitely, no matter how high up you feel you are in the gastronomical chain of, like, you know, experts, if you know that somewhere in there you powered down a grilled cheese sandwich made with Kraft singles and been happy.
For sure. Well, I mean, if you think about it that way, then every bacon in every BLT you've ever had, unless it's been at a very fancy restaurant,
French
spot, same thing.
It's man.
It's still
fat,
delicious.
So, yeah, absolutely.
I say I eat processed food, gross processed food, 30-40% of the time, something like that. I don't know, maybe 30%.
There's a percentage. I work in a percentage.
30%.
It's a quantifiable amount, man.
That's still a C. No, but I mean, it just, like I say, turkey sandwich. You go, you get a turkey sandwich. It's Boar's Head. Boar's Head is not the most terrible place, but those animals suffered. I mean, they didn't ever see the light of day. You know, it's just funny. With meat, we take that for granted more, but I mean, a turkey sandwich is processed food. Unless it comes, like I say, from some real fancy place that charges $18.
Or, you know, you're lucky enough to find one of like the three diners in America that still cook a bird and slice the breast off.
And they exist, but you have to wonder.
You got to look for those. And I do that. I mean, God, man, how many bars have I come out of at 2 in the morning and be like, see the bodega light, you know, like the beacon of light in the
it's like God lit it up for you.
Turkey and Swiss. Yeah. So much mayo. Swimming in your mayo, please.
And the Ray's pizza. Like, whenever there's a city without, like, 24-hour pizza on every four blocks, I'm like, what kind of shithole are we in?
Yeah, man.
Well, we're in the boonies.
This is an evil place. We've got to get out.
I'm like, and we can never come back. But, Greg, you've been an excellent guest. I think you should have your own show somehow. Greg Blase, the cheesemonger and salumi buyer?
Sure.
All right. Salumi, prosciutti, all enogastronomia, right? The whole kit and caboodle. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, man. It's great.
Yeah, definitely go to Italy. I'm sure everyone, Italy, like, instantly teleports $30 out of your wallet, basically.
We just suggest you check at least one credit card at the door.
Just get over with the middleman. Well, we had a great show, and want to thank Joe for engineering us, and stay tuned for the next show hosted by Katie Kiefer called If It Doesn't Kill You.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.